Welcome to What's Left, a political discussion challenging the mainstream left. I'm Eduardo Barca with co-host, teacher and socialist Andy Lipson and community organizer and socialist Kenny Cepeda. We are online at what-s-left.webnode.com. Today we will be discussing what is in the air, the smoke, the fires of California, the USA, in the country right now we're experiencing, and maybe if we pan out as well, the fires that are elsewhere in the globe, if we get there. But it's very hard not to pay attention to the fires that are hitting us, especially here, the three of us that live in San Fran, in the Bay Area, because as we just like last episode, I think it was, I just mentioned quickly that we woke up to being on Mars, and that was because of the orange skies, or, you know, the very dark skies that look like you were at dawn or something. I think that was a first for me. I'm not sure if any of you want to share your experience because of last week.
I can start. So I usually wake up at around 7 in the morning. So that day, I don't remember the exact date. Do you have that?
Wednesday, the 9th.
All right. Well, I remember waking up that day and looking at the clock. Well, kind of looking at the clock and seeing that it was dark. It didn't register. Then I go outside and someone is in the bathroom. One of the, you know, in our household, someone gets up early in the morning and showers. So I was all right. I just woke up early. And I take a second look at my phone and it's 10:20 in the morning, you know, and we usually wake up at 7, you know, because of the sun. I don't have curtains. And I look outside, I take a second look at my computer, look at the iPad. My brother walks in. He's also surprised. And sure enough, it is 10:20 and it's completely dark. And just like you said, Eduardo, I felt like I was in Mars. it hit me. And then not only that, but like I remember watching the news that day and looking at some meteorologists basically playing this down, saying that, you know, it was orange, but it has to do with, light refraction and this and that. And then I'm like, okay, but there's stuff falling on cars, you know, and basically took a full day until they started really being concerned about air quality. Obviously what they were saying versus what I was seeing was in the lightning. But I mean, I guess what I'm saying is that there was a direct effect of the lack of sunlight. And I thought of the dinosaurs. I was like, thinking this is how they probably felt, very confused.
I get up at 6 in the morning and usually it's pretty dark. And then I'm not doing my logging on to school until 8. So from 6 to 8, usually it gets brighter, and it was weird how it wasn't getting brighter. And then I just noticed that red hue. We have already seen in earlier days that the sun, is not red or orange right at the sunset or sunrise, but it's red like 20 degrees into the sky or even 30 degrees into the sky, which there's a reason for that if we want to get into that, it's related to the reason for the red sky. But it was pretty strange, the overall darkness and the red hue, like you said. It was almost like it reminded me of Joss Whedon's Justice League lame ass movie that had a red hue to it the whole time. Me and Brandy were going to Target that day. And it was interesting for me that in some ways I actually was somewhat buoyed by these red skies, by this crazy sky, by this very alarming sky. And I was telling Brandy that it actually put me in almost a good mood, because for the first time, in many ways, the world looks like the way I think it is, messed up. Like effed up, and there's no blue sky. Like I'm not being gaslit by a blue sky that's telling me everything's fine. This is what the world looks like, and I feel like it was interesting for me to feel like, okay, now we're all in this world. Now we're all in this effed up world that is, you know, that is being, that we are playing a role in destroying unless we do something about it. And so those are my thoughts about it.
Yeah, I feel like I too am, I feel many things of what both of you had said, I also were true for me. I think I was fascinated at first. I hadn't ever seen that. It was like seeing for the first time in San Francisco, lots and lots of hail come down as if it was snow. I think that was my fascination with it. But then I sort of remembered how I'm breathing this air and how, if that's what it looks like, how it must look like inside of me with my lungs. And I do my best to take care of my health, to cook well and to eat nutritiously and grow my own food and to exercise. And I try my best, but you can't avoid this. This is outside. This is your environment. And you can't. And I just thought, my goodness, it's like, how close are these fires? Are they encroaching SF? Because I live here in SF. Andy, you live in Oakland, and Kenny and I. So I thought the fires were getting closer and closer for some reason. And so I looked up, you know, online to see how far away were they. And we were just having fires, California, from Oregon, and from I think there were 90 wildfires at that time, if I'm not mistaken. So I also thought about maybe this will, a little differently from you, Andy, but I thought maybe this will maybe help some people wake up and see that this is not normal and we're going to see more of this. I just, when we discussed fires before, I didn't realize, I mean, I did realize we're going to have this frequently, but I didn't know this was going to accelerate, that we were going to have as many as these fires ongoing in our lives. It's a sad thing that we are doing, and we'll get into it for what's really going on, and I hope to hear from both of your points of view.
And overall, 2020 can have its year back. I don't want it.
yes, Andy. Let's pray to Zeus.
I am wondering if people are interested in hearing why the sky was red, like scientifically.
You mentioned that you thought that you would give us a reason as to why that is. You want to share with us?
Please.
You're the scientist in residency.
There you go. See, this is where I get to do my job.
Dr. Lipson for you.
Well, the first question is, do we know why the sky is blue, right? Because and before we start there, is what is the color of the light coming from the sun?
It's white.
Right. White light. It's white light.
Yeah.
And white light is not real. For us, we perceive white light as white, but white light is not one color. White is a combination of all those colors you see in a rainbow.
Yeah.
Purple, blue. We do the red, orange, yellow, green, blue, purple, right? That's part of the electromagnetic spectrum we can see. You combine all those colors together and it goes into our eye and we see white. And so that's the color of the sunlight. Sometimes we think the sun is yellow, but there's a reason for that. It's not an optical illusion, but it's something that happens as a result of our atmosphere. So as you go from purple light to blue light to green light to yellow light to orange light to red light, each of those colors has a different wavelength. Do you know which is the long wavelength and which is the short wavelength? Purple or red? Do you know?
Red is the long, right?
Exactly. Red has a longer wavelength and purple and blue have a shorter wavelength. And it just turns out that the nitrogen and oxygen in our atmosphere happens to be about the size of the purple or blue wavelength of the light, right? Which means that when the white light is coming through, the purple and blue gets absorbed by the nitrogen and oxygen in our atmosphere and then rescattered, right? that means that only the other colors get transmitted through. So our eye really only sees red, orange, yellow, green, red, orange, yellow, and a little bit of green. Okay. That's why the sun looks yellow after the blue and the violet have sort of been absorbed by the atmosphere. Because if you put red, red and green together as light, that produces the color yellow as our eye. So the sun, that transmitted light that comes through the atmosphere looks yellow. So our sun kind of looks yellow to us. And the rest of the sky is blue. It should look purple or purplish, but our eye is not as sensitive or not as good at responding to purple. So it looks blue to us. Well, now there's new particles in the air, right? During this fires and all that kind of stuff. And they're bigger particles, correct? And those particles are roughly the size of the red wavelength and the orange wavelength. So instead of the sky now absorbing blue and violet and rescattering it so that we see a blue sky, it's absorbing the red light and the orange light, and we're seeing a red sky. And there's also these bigger particles that are actually absorbing light and just not letting it through, so it looks darker. So it looks kind of like a dark red. So it has to do with these new molecules that are in the sky that are bigger than the nitrogen and oxygen that are. And one of the first one I mentioned, the blue sky, is what's called the Rayleigh effect. And I think this new effect, or this effect that's new for us, it's called the Mie effect or Mie effect. But it's the same thing. Particles in the air absorbing certain wavelengths based on the size of the particles that are in the air, and then re-emitting them, and so we see them.
I have a question. Why is it that when there are gray skies and the moon is out, the moon looks sort of orangey-reddish?
Particularly in the horizon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going, well, if you think of...
This is during the day.
Yeah, so, I mean, but particularly when the moon is on the horizon,
mm-hmm.
right? So that redness is because the light from there is going through more of the atmosphere, right? Think about the light coming at high noon is coming through the atmosphere directly at us. But if you were coming on the side from the horizon, you're going through a lot more of the atmosphere. So a lot more of that blue light and violet light, and green light is being absorbed, leaving only behind the color red, orange, and yellow. Mm-hmm. And so generally things on the horizon, whether it's the moon or whether it's the sun, tend to look, because the transmitted light now has to go through more atmosphere, and then you get blue light, violet light, and green light all absorbed.
Is this going too far? Is it a stretch for me to say that should we continuously have these wildfires, we would have our skies blanketed with ashes and we would continue seeing this more? Is it a stretch for me to say that this could potentially affect the way that our plants receive sunlight, the way that they photosynthesize?
Do you mean the way they do it or their ability to get enough energy from
it? I don't know. I guess I'm asking, is there, of course there's going to be some effect to plant life, but is it worse with the color of the skies that we are having now, and the blanketed skies filled of ash, how bad is it going to do to our ecology? I guess I'm wondering for my garden, really.
I think the amount of sunlight, I don't necessarily think the color per se is
okay.
Ultraviolets might get through. That's a lot of what your plants are responding to. But the fact that it's darker and the fact that light is having a tougher time getting through and radiation is having a tougher time getting through, that's not good for any plants. We're experiencing sort of, like, it's what Kenny said, we're experiencing the way we kind of predict when that, there's a theory that asteroid hit the planet and then it kicked up a bunch of dust and it made it really hard for plants and things like that to grow and killed off dinosaurs and like that. That it's that theory about the asteroid that hit way back when, an extinction event. That's also a theory people have about nuclear war, nuclear winter. I think it's a similar theory when you've heard about those super volcanoes that they say exist along our coast that kick up so much dust that it's going to actually make it so that more light doesn't get onto the surface of the planet. It will get colder. And and plants will die out. I mean, they won't have enough light to make sugar.
And as well as in the Matrix, I think at one point they there's something like that. I saw that
the machines intentionally blotted out the sun to kill off the humans.
Yeah.
And I suspect that it's not just about plants, but animals too, right? The way animals like behave. At least that morning that we were talking about, my mother talked about and took video of birds like acting confused. You know, at that time of the day.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And certainly, obviously, any effect on plants is going to come back and have an effect on animals. You know, and all sorts of survival things. So it's like that. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's also freaking people out and freaking creatures out.
And like for me personally, I mean, it had an effect because, you know, here I was dealing with the pandemic, you know, or the shelter in place, you know, the way our lives have been reorganized. And then, you know, I'm counting on going out and kind of interacting with nature and losing that ability because we have to stay cooped up again. Like that threw me into like a this emotional psychological disarray that, you know, manifested really in different ways. So I mean, it also has, I think, an effect on us humans, obviously. You know,
we already have to stay in the time that we have to go out, or the time alone, or whatever we can, whenever we can go out, all of a sudden we have to stay indoors.
Yeah, I was talking to Kenny about this earlier. This probably gets us into the discussion, but look, there's been a massive reorganization of society that's been justified by COVID, particularly COVID, which one of its most telltale signs that is, they said, are the respiratory effects, acute respiratory responses and pneumonia and things like that, which is what COVID is saying is how it hurts people and kills people. But we have to recognize it's a small percentage of the entire population that have that response. That's bad, but we've essentially justified a complete reorganization of society on that basis of some people, very few people having this effects. Now you have something taking place that can affect everyone. It can affect people with asthma, young people, old people, that is really having a respiratory effect for everyone. And it's interesting that they're not talking beyond the talking points of Barack Obama or Governor Newsom saying this must, now we have to vote like our life depends on it. You see absolutely nothing being talked about being done in relationship to this. Like, you don't see a complete reorganization of society in relationship to this attack on all of us, whereas you saw it around COVID. Mm. It's very interesting to me. Like, to me, it exposes the lie that our state is marshaling itself to keep us safe. When something like this happens, and they're like, they're really not going to do anything other than say, vote for Biden.
Mm-hmm. Is it implied in what you're saying, Andy? I suppose I think of it this way, where COVID was used to reorganize the way that we function as society. So we're remote, for example, we're shutting down businesses, we're closing schools, etc. But here we have also the wildfires, and we're not taking drastic actions like asking people maybe not to live in forests. And that isn't, I mean, I don't hear anyone saying, I mean, there are very few people, scientists mostly say that, but I don't hear it from politicians to tell people we shouldn't do this. We need to reorder things. Just the way in the way that we are with COVID. Is that what you're implying, that it's interesting that we are reorganizing society because under the name of COVID, but we don't organize society when there are these wildfires, and it's because COVID is convenient as a political scheme to be able to accelerate agendas that have been lying about, as we've discussed, right? Capitalism, coronavirus. But it's interesting how these wildfires are happening, and very few people are saying we should reorganize. I mean, there's just moving away temporarily in shelters and then hopefully moving back. But there isn't an organization. Not that maybe we agree with it, maybe, but we're just observing that there are drastic changes happening with COVID, but there aren't drastic changes happening with wildfires. And maybe it's because this is more of a reorganization that's more beneficial to the capitalist class than this one. This isn't really, what does it do for us? It's not that imminent, maybe. Is that implied in what you're saying as well?
Yeah, I mean, look, under no conditions would I trust this state to do a lockdown. But if you were if there were conditions that would say, everyone stay inside, shut your windows, we're going to distribute N95 masks, everyone's got to stay away, this would have been it. I still would have said this state would be doing it for false reasons. So I can't accept that. But I understand why you're being so careful, Eduardo, because it's like any time you give the state a little bit of like, oh, let's try and do this, they're not going to do it right. And they're going to do it for their own interest. But yes, I think essentially I am saying that. Like, to me, the fact that they're rallying around that and not this and not a real health emergency. This is a health emergency right now on the West Coast. And I think that, like you said, it's happening in Russia and was it Australia as well?
Australia. I was in Paris and I remember some Australians where I was staying at just telling me about being evacuated constantly. They had massive fires where all of the smoke was going over to South America because, you know, the winds, that's how far it reached across the oceans.
Yeah.
So it was massive. And Brazil in the rainforests, you know, California ongoing, Oregon, and in Russia and Canada as well, I was reading. So it's happening everywhere. But I don't see the massive changes that are done for COVID as I see them here.
I'll say one area where I think I do see something happening, and it's again, I feel like the ruling class is up to no good, but I should let maybe Kenny, if you want to say something.
I mean, if it's about sticking to this point, I think you should go because like, my thought is kind of shifting a little about like the massive lies, you know, pretending to care about coverage of climate change, you know, when in reality, it's another tool to lie to us because, you know, it's not just the fires, it's floodings, you know, it's like these massive swings in natural events everywhere, and especially like on the fringes of society. There are massive events happening in Antarctica, Greenland, you know, in the Arctic, where the ice is melting, you know, like ice cream on a hot day. You know, and then we have politicians, especially the liberal, you know, class, claiming scientific knowledge, paying attention to scientists, while completely, you know, dismissing all these events or manipulating, giving half-baked truth or not even truth, just manipulating things straight up. You know, like we can't forget that Obama, Mr., you know, I care about the environment, you know, moved the U.S. to become the biggest producer of oil in the world. And they, at the hand of fracking, so that's a green alternative, you know. He was selling as a green alternative to oil, you know. Where in reality, what it did is it augmented the production of oil, you know. But then you know, I think at the bottom we have, you know, people being led to believe that the Republicans are the ignorant alone, or the ones that are denying science, when in reality the Democrats are doing it in a different way, but they're also denying science, you know, in presenting these nefarious things as, you know, and we also discussed that movie, and that's another episode, you know, the Planet of the Humans, right, where we talked about green technologies and really meaning, you know, what they argue in the movie is that a lot of oil companies are behind these green technologies that are not really a silver bullet for, you know, the issues that we're facing. So I guess what I'm saying is that they're both lying to us. In picking these, falling into that battle that Republicans are science deniers doesn't highlight the fact that, you know, Democrats are science manipulators.
I agree that the Democrats and the Republicans have showed no interest in trying to improve conditions for us or trying to even the slightest make changes with all the lobbyists that they have behind them rallying for them to continue destroying our earth, especially if they're capitalists, because they're going to look for their profits over their the welfare of us, really. I agree with that part. I do think that most of the environmental movement, because I'm a part of it, but at a distance, they're largely in the area of liberals and in progressives. I always feel that there are key slight differences, and maybe you both can disagree, but I do feel the Republicans outwardly deny that there's nothing happening, right? And their base rejects any sort of environmental catastrophe. There is nothing going on. And so that is the only thing I feel is the key difference. Maybe not the politicians, but both of them lie to their base, yes. But on the left, there are environmental movements that, even if they are Democrats, they consider the term Democrats, not the politicians, but the Democrats, there is a movement on the left side, whereas I feel the Republican space, it does this just a denial, complete denial that there's anything going on our planet. And so I agree with, even you've said this before, Andy, it echoes what Kenny has said, is that I agree with you that both Democrats and Republicans are in on this together. Yes, I agree with that part. I simply feel, and maybe that's not what you're saying, Kenny, maybe you can tell me, but I feel the base of the Democrats, the base, people who unfortunately believe in the Bidens and the Kamala Harris, they do accept that there is environmental catastrophe, destruction. Yeah. And obviously the Democrats are going to co-opt it, right? And I think that I'll just comment on that.
And for me, like, it's just like going back to Bernie and Ocasio-Cortez. Like, I don't look necessarily at their intentions or their rhetoric so much as their function. And obviously, no doubt, Republicans, at least, they're playing that game of completely, okay, there's nothing happening here. But let's not pretend like that whatever the Democrats are doing or liberals are doing is progress. Saying we know something is wrong, we're telling you we're doing something about it or pretend to do something about it, but in reality, nothing is happening. So the function, the actual result is the same. Nothing is moving forward. The left is only being kept busy with these little crumbs, thinking that you're feeding yourself, but in reality, you're not. And we've talked about policies and this and that, and that's why, I am a socialist, that I don't believe we can make policies fast enough. We cannot contain capitalism. They are the policymakers. They will circumvent things. They will manipulate things. And not only that, but on the liberal side, they will lead you to believe that something is happening, but nothing is happening.
Well, I would say something is happening. And mm-hmm. It's not that they're not doing something. They are the liberal wing of the ruling class, people who actually promote Greta Thunberg. They promote her, and that's she's connected to Al Gore. Like, I found that out. Like, she is connected to Al Gore by one degree of separation, and his group. And I'll say something about that. But they aren't staying put. I'll give a few names of things that I found. This is on an article. I can't remember the magazine it was in. It was called Climate and the Money Trail. And it's talking about a few boards, like the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosure, where they were trying to create a green finance initiative aiming to channel trillions of dollars to green investments. It's chaired by Michael Blomberg. It has key people from JPMorgan Chase, BlackRock, Barclays Bank, China ICBC Bank, Tata Steel, Dow Chemical, mining company BHP Billiton, and David Blood of Al Gore's Generation Investment LLC. Now, Greta Thunberg has connections to Generations, by the way, Generation Investment. Furthermore, there's other agencies, right? Yeah, there was a memorandum of understanding with what's called the Breakthrough Energy Breakthrough Energy in Europe. Okay, and members of that Breakthrough Energy group are Virgin Air, Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg. Let's see, Carlyle Group, George Soros, Masayoshi's son from SoftBank Japan. And this guy finishes off, like, this is the final paragraph. And I really agree with this. I think of this article. It says, make no mistake, when the most influential multinational corporations, the world's largest institutional investors, including BlackRock, Goldman Sachs, the UN, World Bank, the Bank of England, and other central banks line up behind financing of a so-called green agenda, call it Green New Deal or whatever, it's time to look behind the surface of public climate activist campaigns to the actual agenda. So it's not staying put, folks. There's just in the same way that distance learning is a plan, there is a plan afoot to reorganize the economy and use global warming and global warming catastrophism to make trillions for the big bankers and for the big investors. And that's going to come from the liberal wing. It's not that Trump is opposing that. Because here's the thing, it's like distance learning. Trump says he wants to open up, but he's appointed Betsy DeVos, who's at the head of making distance learning happen. So both parties are trying to do this. The question that both parties are trying to say to the capitalist class will be more effective at implementing your plan. And that's the difference. Which one will be more influential in screwing the US working class or the working class in their countries? That's the only thing that's up for debate. And that's what they're trying to, that's what this year's election is going to be about, is who is going to do a better job getting those forces to screw us or fuck us over. I actually think the Democrats are going to do a better job fucking us over. So in that regard, I actually almost think of them as the greater evil. But it's not really true. They both represent different challenges. So that's how I would put it. And Greta Thunberg, by the way, is connected to those folks. Anyway.
Oh, Andy.
I had to get the Greta comment in. That's not the issue.
You like this couldn't be a peaceful one time. Let's all go home and sleep.
Please
well
ignore. I care about Barclays. I care about Goldman Sachs. Okay. I can't let things go, man. I got a bad attitude.
Okay. Let me ask you quickly, because I didn't know that about Greta. So you're saying that she's connected to which? Just so that our audience could look that up for themselves. You're saying she's connected to which?
So Greta Thunberg and her friend Jamie Margolin were both part of a youth advisor called a Swedish group called We Don't Have Time NGO. And that group was founded by CEO Ingmar Rensig. Rensig is a member of Al Gore's Climate Reality organization leaders. And they're the ones who put those people forward as the face of, we have to do something about the climate catastrophe. So it's Al Gore, Rensick, and Rensick found these two people and he put them forward.
And Rensick is terrible wife. Tell us, our audience.
He's just a rich MF who's connected to Al Gore for the same reason, like that dude Blood from Goldman Sachs. It's the same, I mean, he's just
connected to fossil fuels?
Yeah. I mean, connected to, let's see. Well, he's a Swedish CEO. I'm not sure what he's in the business of. I'm sure he's doing really
well. Is there any connected to any dirty energy?
That I can't say for a fact. But are you saying that people connected to Al Gore are connected to clean energy?
I'm not saying. I just want to know what you are. I'm just trying to trace back. If you're going to smear someone's name, I'm going to trace back where, because so this CEO isn't connected to anything dirty energy.
Well, he's connected to Al Gore, and who's connected to the Goldman Sachs. Yeah, that's dirty.
Well, like for me, what's at the point of discussion here is whether, you know, I think there is people who believe we can entrepreneur the way out of this, capitalist the way out of this, and to me. Of course, you know, I don't believe in that for obvious reasons. You know, the profit motive is really what's causing all these catastrophes. Ultimately, this is about political power. This is about political will as to who dictates, you know, what priorities are in society. And, you know, there's people, basically those people to me are in the field of basically, let's keep begging, you know, the ruling class to do something about it. You know, let's just keep voting in someone, you know, and change it from the top down. You know, let's just please keep asking for a Hail Mary from, you know, from the people that are, that have, you know, connections. They're making a killing and they're preparing to make a killing, like literal, figuratively and literal killing, you know, on the way, you know, to disasters.
I understand. I'm just trying to figure out if Andy's going to pull that on me. I really want to know, is that the only connection?
That's what I found. That's not my largest point, but I'm just saying that these people are put in front of us for reasons, Eduardo. And as soon as Greta Thunberg starts to threaten the interests of Goldman Sachs and BlackRock, who are ultimately the forces that are in line with Al Gore and his climate reality organization, then she's going to be dropped like a hot potato.
I would be disappointed if I knew that Greta was in some way connected to any big money, any dirty energy institutions, NGOs, any organization that definitely isn't aligned with what she is saying. No, I simply think that, just quickly on her, I admire young people, any young person that, and I hope they don't fall into the trap of depending or trusting the Democrats or the liberal left wing parties that tend to gaslight them into thinking that they are going to do something for the earth when they're not. And I hope, and I just want to highlight that there is a force, a youth force, that I think we should try to also convince that there is something outside of politicians and the ballot box and depending on these parties that are part of a system that isn't going to change itself for environmental causes. But the youth, the young people out there, there is a very strong desire for change. And I think that we, by criticizing them, I'm just trying to, I don't want to criticize the hope, the idealism that they carry. I simply think that they should be given another opportunity to know where they can exert their energy, and hopefully in a socialist cause, in an anarchist cause, outside of this system, anti-capitalist cause. That's all I have to say about that.
But I mean, they need to know the game they're coming into.
Yes, I agree. And I do agree.
And this is why.
Yes.
I mean, and I don't know what's in her mind or what's in her heart, but for those of us who are trying to do something about this, we have to know why her voice got amplified and who was amplifying her voice. And it wasn't the environment. It wasn't people looking to do anything about the environment. It was major people who are investing trillions of dollars in green technologies and green energy and are wanting to use the global warming scare to rush everyone into that so that they get trillions of dollars again. They just got over on us during this COVID thing, and they're going to try to do it again. They're going to keep on doing it over and over again, and they're always going to use, we're doing this for your best interest to do it. So it's not about Greta to me. I listed off a bunch of things that are far bigger than Greta, far bigger than you, BlackRock, Barclays, oil companies, banks. These are the people.
And I know that they are behind this, and I do agree. I wonder what's behind all of these, sometimes behind some of like 350.org movement, or, right, you know, you have Green America movement. That's why I have stopped supporting a lot of those, or Sierra Club, you know. I agree. Where I think I just take issue is you seem to think that she's amplified simply. She may be amplified by some of these organizations. I agree, but as if there is some hidden agenda from her specifically, that's the only part I take issue with, because I think she was very admirable by herself on her own, very genuine, interested in about doing something. And she's always been asked, well, what is that, doing something? And she's, I don't know, that isn't my job to figure out. I'm just a kid trying to say that this is an issue for me. And I'm disheartened by what's going on in the world. So I do trust her genuine interests. However, she may be misguided. I'm not speaking to that. And maybe she will be, tons of people are trying to definitely seize the moment or seize her as an icon. But I do think that she is a representative of many young people that do feel disheartened by what's going on. And this is our generation. People are, you know, I was reading some study where people are now beginning to have, young people especially, are beginning to have some anxiety around their future. And I think that that is something that we need to consider. It isn't just the Greta, there are many Gretas where they are genuine. They really have an anxiety over climate catastrophe, over World War III, over the way that we are going about in the world. I just simply think that if we criticize them, then it doesn't, I don't know if we're surmounting to anything.
It's holding people accountable. I don't know, you want to say something, Kenny?
No, please.
So here's what I mean. And it is true for a 17-year-old leader as much as it is for a 35 or 40-year-old leader. When I was running, you know, I've worked with Darylin for almost 20 years, right?
Please tell us, Darylin, who is
Darylin? Darylin is a colleague at Mission High School who, yep. You know, I love her. She's a comrade. We disagree on some things, but she's a colleague who's fighting for the kind of change that I want to see as well. She considers herself a socialist. You know, she's a revolutionary. When I was running for vice president, running for vice president, I talked about what we were standing for. Darylin was quite clear with me. She goes, look, if you get elected and you don't do the things you say, I'm done with you. Like, I'm done with you, dude. And she's absolutely right. Absolutely right to say that. If I get to a position of being able to make change, she's not supposed to do me a favor. I'm supposed to do something. I'm supposed to build something. I'm supposed to help build the fight. And if I don't, then everyone has to come after me. Everyone who has a conscience, everyone who believes in the cause has to come after me at that point. More than Trump, more than Biden, they have to come after me because I said I stood for something else. So when you try to stand for something and you actually say you stand for something, you have to be held that much more accountable for that thing. The stakes are much higher for revolutionaries and people who say they're trying to make change than these fuckers like Biden and Trump. They don't give a shit. That's what I'm saying. So it is about recognizing when you come into the place of saying to fellow workers and fellow students and fellow everyone, look, I know when you're angry and I'm going to help you make change and you're not Biden and you're not Trump, then there isn't a hundredfold, a thousandfold greater responsibility to be held accountable. Darylin was willing to say to me, a person she's known for 17, 18 years, you know what? I'll cut relations with you, like in a heartbeat. If you walk off that line. Do you think she was wrong to say that? She's absolutely right because she knows what pressures I would have been under. And if I did that, she would have to come after me and say, you're a fraud, you're a failure, I can't even believe you. And be like, unless you change course, I'm done with you. And that's the proper, that is the mandate of revolutionary leadership. It has to follow through on what it says it's going to do. It has to be truthful. And if behind me, if I say I'm a revolutionary and behind me is BlackRock, behind me is Goldman Sachs, I mean, I don't know what to tell you, right? Like, then I am doing so much damage to the movement that the best thing a person like you or Kenny could do is expose me as the fraud I am. That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so things are bad. I mean, you know, I think we've talked about in previous episodes as to, you know, that I think Lipson and I maybe have argued that we're not going to die from the environment. Yeah, masses of people will face, you know, death and stuff, but the real threat to humanity and, you know, organized life is the wars that will be precipitated by these events. And, you know, so that's the real threat, I think. And what do we do about it? You know, what is our proposition, you know, from where we stand? You know, like for me, it's like, obviously you know, a socialist revolution, an international socialist revolution, you know, where workers impose their will and their dictatorship over, you know, the capitalist class. And nothing short of that, you know, we've talked about that, and I think that we have disagreements, Eduardo. You know, where you basically have said that, you know, we have to protect rivers, we have to protect this and that. And, you know, I hope they understand that I want to do that, you know, but I don't see any other way than a full-on revolution. So I don't know what your thoughts are in terms of, you know, solutions, like immediate and short-term, long-term.
It feels like we come back to this, doesn't it? It's always coming back to our approaches.
Got to have the episode, man. We got to do this episode eventually. Whether you're trying to get out of it, but we have to do this episode.
I've never said on an episode. I just said this to Andy on a call. I hope there is a revolution. I hope that the working class does dismantle this entire system and that we have a new system that works for the betterment of our planet, for humanity, that we take care of not just a few, but every one of us. I hope that happens. And Kenny has every right to go after me and ask me, what is your approach? I have said to you, Andy, and I will now respond a little bit to Kenny, is that I see this system as if, like, there are two walls closing in onto us. And I feel as if that the walls are, like, you know, those torture places where the walls are closing in on people. I feel as if there are some of us, like myself, that want a revolution to happen, and we are just holding back these walls, trying to, as there is this bickering and fighting and sorting out of ideas that are happening. And I think that not voting for politicians necessarily, but as I said, trying to salvage what we have of our planet. If we don't have protections around some areas such as the Brazilian forests, the rainforest that exists, if we don't have some protections around our national parks or our wilderness or even just the water, we won't have a planet to even have a cause to fight for. Why would we even have a revolution if there isn't anything really to sell, anything to save? So I don't see how, you know, I wouldn't, if I saw the entire planet was a desert land, I'd say, well, there isn't anything I'm going to hop on the train for. I mean, you know, so I feel as if both of you are just saying concentrate on the revolution and when will that happen? And, you know, by the time the revolution happens, when people wake up, I think I'm not jumping on this train. There isn't anything to do here. When anything, nothing will grow. You know, it's a desert land. It's like the, you know, the sand dunes of Northern Africa at that point. I might as well just die. I mean, by the time the revolution happens and desert land, I might just die from a heat stroke, you know? And so I just don't see how, I just see the necessity for some of us to hold back, buffer, right? A little bit of the destruction that is happening as the walls are closing in on us, to hold that back as there is the fight and bickering and debate around the ideas of how we need to fight the capitalist class, as well as my unresolved issues with socialism, which is not an episode for today. We can discuss that another
later
time.
Later, though, right?
Huh?
Later, we'll do that one.
Uh-oh. Are you trying to get me on?
I'm getting you on the record.
Andy. let's all move right. That to the side for the moment. But so I hope that you understand, both of you understand my intentions. And that is, I can't simply just be in the battle of ideas here and, you know, sitting in a circle here discussing Marx as I'm seeing the forest over there being just sanctioned off to, you know, bought off by people. and just what I am I just going to be about here in these continuous, endless, long debates into the night until we figure this out? I mean, I do think that there is some compromise in the sense that we need to try to just try at least to salvage some of what we have currently until we have this train going. I don't know how else to put this. Next time when we discuss elections, I'll bring up many, many examples. I just don't have them in the moment, but many, many examples of where environmental policies, laws were enacted in order to, for example, the redwood forests would have all been cut down had we not had like, all right, enough, hold on. And because of those laws that were enacted, environmental laws that were enacted, we have our redwood forests still to this day that we're able to enjoy. Because otherwise the resources would have just wiped out an entire forest here in California. And I don't have that at the moment, but I promise I'll be prepared next time with countless examples to demonstrate why I do believe in voting to conserve some of our natural beauties and resources to survive. I remind folks that we have done this episode before, a similar episode, turns out it's not the same. We have done a similar episode where we have covered wildfires and what's happening in California. And if anyone wants to go revisit, if anyone wants to just see it, because for new listeners and podcast audience and / YouTube audience, they can, and we'll link it in the notes below. I felt we missed the piece about our farm workers. That's the one piece I realized we didn't bring up. We talked about our prisoners not even having any compensation, being paid $1 even for a day. Made to work under very harsh conditions. We talked about how there are even pollutant areas, very contaminated areas being burned, and how some of those pollutants are carried into our atmosphere. But I was listening back to that episode that we had done last, and I invite everyone to go listen to it. And we didn't cover the farm workers. And how much of their labor is being exploited for, and they're considered as essential workers under this system, during a pandemic, during these wildfires, and during very harsh, just regular climate conditions. And maybe if any of you want to join in on that, we could talk about that, because I feel as if they're always overlooked, and we should be most grateful for them because they bring food to our table. They're the ones that we should mostly cherish for all the work they do. And I don't even know how I feel about that word, just cherish them as workers. I think that they're just seen as, I don't know, it's like slave labor to me. And if anyone wants to chime in on that, maybe we can discuss that so we don't leave them out as we did in the last episode.
I think everyone who has to work outside, that's something that probably shouldn't be happening. Like, I would say in a social society, we would, if there were fires that were raging like this, which do happen, although in my estimation, a lot of this is due to development and the way that humans have encroached in areas and kept fires from happening, suppressing fires, so that when they happen, they're even worse. That you can create a situation it's not healthy for people to be working. And you'd have to deal with food stocks that we got rid of during a period of COVID, and have another way of dealing with it. And I don't think it should all be borne by one section of the workforce. So that's what I would say.
I mean, I don't see a way where, you know, again, capitalism can respect life. And I mean, I see another way, you know, like if that kind of work has to be done, then, you know, there is protective equipment, you know, that could be provided. And, but it shows, again, it exposes how capitalism sees working people as disposable. You know, like for me, for example, Like, I don't even blame my bosses who are like small capitalists. Like, I understand, you know, like they're in a precarious situation themselves, but ultimately their job, you know, fundamentally is to make money so that the business survives and, you know, and they have a, make a living. So basically we were being protected for COVID as to have all these precautions, but then this fire happens and we're, you know, we have to serve people outside, you know, or, you know, we have to engage in other, or my mother who's at the hotel, like, you know, she shared this story today about them having a meeting yesterday and the, whatever the top executive of the hotel, shaming them for not, social distancing, but yet they're being asked now, they used to have protocols to leave rooms to, in quarantine for 3 days. Now, because of the demand and pressure, they don't give a shit about quarantining rooms anymore. So, you know, the notion of safety in this system is thrown overboard. You know, it's just bullshit. You know, they will run you down if you have to. So, I mean, yeah, I see farm workers and, you know, I don't want to like tokenize them. Many people in that circumstance, and of course, you know, they are in many ways, you know, way more important than any fucking lawyer or engineer, you know, and yet they're the worst paid around the world. You know, they're the most exploited class around the world, like that section of the working class worldwide. You know, there is massive suicides in you know, in fucking India, in France, because, you know, they're indebted to, you know, Monsanto. You know, these crops and, you know, and Bill Gates is, you know, very deep in that shit too. So, I mean, ultimately, like, to change that, it's going to take revolution, you know, not just one type of worker doing their own, like, strikes just for that one reform that's going to better their lives, but it's for political power, you know?
Yeah.
And so they will continue to live in those conditions. You know, we can, you know, again, like, talk about, you know, glorifying them. But unless we have a revolution, their conditions are not going to get better.
Yeah. Yes. I don't mean to tokenize them. I simply hope that to bring some visibility to them. Because I do think sometimes when we do discuss the working class, sometimes within our working class, we tend to ignore some of the workers more than others. Sometimes that happens. Just for example, just simple, like at school, right? This happens a lot, Andy, where you're at your work site and teachers will discuss about the union, but they'll forget their janitors. I sometimes feel as if there isn't unity amongst us because we still deem some better than others. So I only hope that our prisoners that are working on these wildfires, our farm workers, our firefighters, which I would even say these prisoners that are working to quell these fires, they are firefighters. They're very much doing the work of a firefighter. So I don't want to undermine their work.
I think I heard this time they're not using them as much, possibly for political reasons, but the other reason they gave was COVID.
Yeah.
Yes. I thought I saw the governor of California just recently sign off something where they can be used now. This is recent, I think. But yeah, they weren't using them some weeks ago. I'm not sure if maybe anyone can fact check that if they wish. But yes, even if they did.
That's where Kamala Harris famously, the last fires was when Kamala Harris was DA, and where there were prisoners who should have been paroled, and she said, let's not parole them because we need them to work on their fires.
Yeah. Used for slave labor. Yes. The other thing I have, just another bullet point here that I had on my notes, was just, and I said, we said this in the last episode, but it's, there needs to be some serious shifting of ways of living in these areas. We're just encroaching just too many areas where people should not live. And maybe even the areas where we have lived for a very long time, maybe that's including San Francisco, there has to be some changes in the way that we live. And I think in any society, we have to reconsider the way, what, you know, we change with alongside the climate. I think we have to acclimate to the changing times. Things are changing, the environment's changing. However, I think I'm not too sure where you stand on climate change, Kenny. Maybe you can share with us. But I know Andy has said that he has some suspicions around the scientific data that exists around climate change, global warming, right? But however, I think we agree that there is environmental destruction happening at the hands of the ruling class or corporate interests, right? That's what we do agree with. There is something happening to the environment. Did you want to say something about climate change, Kim?
I mean, just for me, the way I see it, where I stand is that we're beyond like reversing this, you know, in a significant way. The only thing we can do is mitigate and adapt. And unless the interest of the masses is reflected in the execution of power, you know, in the will and priorities of society, then, you know, really horrible things are coming, you know. It's that whole notion of socialism or barbarism. And so, yeah, I mean, to me, revolution is not something that, you know, has to happen down the road. It's a priority. It's now or never, maybe, you know. And I think that's where, like, I get frustrated, you know, especially on the left, you know, that we will have all these different fights. And I think that, you know, that's been done on purpose, that, you know, we all have different parts of the elephant, but we're fucking touching an elephant, you know?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a good analogy.
But ultimately, it comes back to capitalism. And so, you know, the one thing that unites us is that we work for a living, you know, at least most of us, you know, unless you're living off rent and, you know, your investments, you're going to be screwed.
And yeah. I'd say that this is an area of reading that is new for me, but it's one that was kind of introduced to me by Allison, who was on a previous episode. So I do believe there's development going on out there that people are making money off of, and, you know, developers, wealthy landowners, not the wealthiest, not the corporations that are, that I don't think it's, I don't really know how they're connected to the people who are building these really nice houses out in the what is it called? The wilderness urban interface. And that a lot of that development is responsible for basically California being like kindling now, because it hasn't allowed for the regular fires to kind of go through, burn it out, stuff like that. They're suppressing those fires to protect property where property shouldn't be. Now, Allison would look at that and say, you know what? I'm not going to speak for Allison, but I think she's directed me towards some things that have talked about people who think that this is a part of a plan to push people into cities for smart cities and things like that, so that there's actually going to be the basis of clearing out the rural centers, the rural regions, and pushing people into smart cities for easier surveillance, blah, blah, blah. And those are the same folks who actually think that some of these fires are being started by electromagnetic weapons by the military. Again, I understand why they're saying that. It's not my beat right now, but I just want to say that there are those thoughts out there that you can find that look at that, at this angle on that.
Yeah. I mean, like for me, it's not just like, you know, trying to read alternative, knowledge or analysis on the evidence or whatever. For me, it's also anecdotal, you know, like coming from Central America, you know, there are massive changes happening, you know, in the So yeah, I mean, that's why I think this is real, you know, and it's coming, and you know, I think we're feeling it, you know, more and more. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's, I'm open to conspiracy theories, I guess, you know. Yeah, and there's a saying in Spanish, I guess, that if you think 30, you will find the truth, something like that.
Oh.
Si piensas sucio, encontrarás la verdad, something like that. But yeah, I mean, I think that, who knows, but again, that's how I come to this conclusion, you know, like, and I think time will tell. But I am concerned, you know, because if we think that, you know, like the rise of nationalism and, you know, these factions is bad right now, wait until, you know, borders are, you know, going to be overwhelmed, and, you know, it's going to be like World War Z type of thing, you know, like completely militarized, and, you know, borders and people fighting each other. And we'll see. I mean, and I think it's very perverse for a ruling class, you know, like that they know what's coming, you know, and yet they're doing this shit with eyes wide open, you know. So yeah. I guess the other option we have, if we don't have revolution, is to get a ticket on, you know, one of those Elon Musk rockets to Mars.
They're finding life on Venus.
And just to throw it out there, you know, like, maybe, I don't know if it's relevant to this one, but, you know, something that we don't even consider is that a lot of those things, they're not about fucking life. They're about militarizing space. You know, these projects that Elon Musk and other these fuckers are doing, you know, it's private enterprise to militarize space.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Yeah. I doubt what a lot of the intentions of it, trying to monopolize space. I guess that's it for me. I don't have, my bullet points are done. There wasn't much, and this turned out longer than what?
20-minute episode, man. We did it.
We did it in an hour and 20 minutes.
Okay. That does it for this week's episode. What's Left is a weekly political podcast / channel challenging the mainstream left. We post information about our topics and our guests on the episode notes, wherever you found this episode, or on our blog at what-s-left.webnode.com. You can find past episodes to this podcast / channel there and connect with us. I remind folks, if you like anything that you have heard here, please share your favorite episode, rate, review, and subscribe, and turn on your notifications to have us come up on your feed to any of our six platforms on Spotify, iTunes, Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, BitChute, or YouTube. If you would like to give us feedback about something you've heard or suggest something for us to cover, connect with us through our blog. I'm Eduardo Barca with the lovely Andy Lipson and Kenny Cepeda. Take care and see you all next time. Stay safe, be kind, put your love in work, Andy. And fill out your...
Happy endings. I love happy endings.
Wait, Andy. And fill out your census.
Oh, yeah. You have to get one in. Oh, my God.
Stay safe. Wash your hands. See you all next time before Andy says anything else.
Bye.